Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whoever's calling, whoever's viewing from wherever part of the world. I'd like to welcome you to the fourth or fifth podcast for the Global Millennium Caucus. This is a podcast that I've been doing for the past week, two, and I've done about four or five podcasts. Some of them have gotten some pretty good reviews. I want to talk about one, which was the parenting, which was kind of a interesting review, where we talked about parenting and how we can be a helicopter mom or a dragon dad. Now, I got some feedback from some viewers, a few people who've listened or watched my live YouTube or podcast on Anchor. First of all, let's give some credits to where credits are due. Let's say this is the Millennial Caucus. I'm JP, and I'm your host for the Millennial Caucus. Today, we're live on the dial-in. You can also leave a voicemail, and I can respond to your voicemail messages later. My dial-in number is 1-641-715-3900, extension 860-662. Pound. Just leave a message. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you have any topics you'd like for me to discuss. This week we're talking about dragons and the Drago movement. Drago movement, so to speak. I don't know why people want to talk about that. I mean, I've talked about some pretty boring things already, like Bitcoin and parenting. You know, I've talked about some pretty interesting topics. Some people want to know about my Twitter handle. I have two Twitter handles. I have a personal and a professional. My professional is CEO JD Global. Sorry. And my other is Lord JD, at Lord JD. And my tag on there is Draco. A lot of people ask me about that tag. I'll tell you a little bit about where it came from, why I thought of the name, who suggested it to me, you know, a Caucasian gentleman who was getting married at the time suggested it to me. He knew me. I was with a domestic partner who I've moved on and broken up with now, named Marv, and Marvin, nice gentleman, Haitian, a little extreme, but, you know, it's too much for me to handle at that time. I was pretty young. This was maybe, I've had a Twitter since 2002. My old Twitter used to be Champagne Cola. Champagne, because I love champagne. I've loved champagne since 99. I used to buy champagne and mix it with gin and stuff. You know, I'm a big champagne buff. And then Cola, because there's a soda pop in New York, which is where I used to live, that was called Champagne Cola, which is like soda pop, but it was like champagne soda pop. So Champagne Cola. So I just thought, hey, why not Champagne Cola? I also had a Twitter handle that was John Paul D. Wilson, which is my name. So anyway, back to the point. So now we are going live. We're talking about the Drago movement. So now the Drago movement is something that's been going on since maybe 9 years, eight or nine years. The Drago movement has been all about The Drago movement has been all about people who are, they consider dragons. So first of all, I think it's a little phobic. You know, that's just my opinion. You know, they think of, I'm a tall guy, I'm a gay guy, you know, a bisexual gay guy. And so, of course, gay guys are dragons, you know, because it's like drag queen, dragon. But then, you know, I'm a male looking dragon, so I'm a Drago, you know. And so I found it to be a little disheartening at first, but then it's also like, you know, how blacks, we used to come out saying, I'm a black African-American, we used to come up saying, oh, what's up, my nigga, you know, and stuff like that. And I don't really use the N-word. Like, that's not something I use. You know, like, I also don't call people Mitches, you know, like, I'm not, what up, Mitch? You know, I'm not like that. But some people are. And so sometimes when we jokingly say things, it's a good way to express our point constructively, criticizing, where people can take that insight and they can say something from it like, maybe I can read a little bit more into this, and maybe I can learn a little bit more, get a little bit of a better understanding about this because of this comment from someone. So let's get into the Drago. Let's get into the Drago movement. So this is all about the Drago. So now, excuse me. All right. So why choose this name? So now Draco to me, Draco, not Drago, Draco to me is directing resistance of Americans' common order. So when we think progressively, we think of conflict. When we are breached to conflict, we have to figure out ways to resist that conflict. This is just a normal process. Computers do this. This is why your computer software always has to upgrade, you know, or programming languages have to upgrade, or languages in general, you know, like languages upgrade and change. This is a normal reaction to life, and we shouldn't fear it, even though we do. I fear change just like anyone else. Even though we do fear these changes, we don't have to look at these changes and be like, oh, it's the end of the world. It's resistance. It's negative. You know, it's feedback that's not beneficial to me, you know, or it's not going to, you know, help me reach my short or long-term goals. So I met a man in brief, small petite woman he was dating, a tall Caucasian male. Caucasian is white, Anglo-Saxon or Anglo. And so it was in summer of like 2010 that I started the whole Draco thing. And so that's over, so it's 2018. That's over 8 years of tweets. So then that means I've got 8 years of tweets under my belt. Just 8 years of tweets progressively, just tweeting. And they're not all negative tweets, you know. Some people take the things that you say and they take it into a wild context. You know, someone could say something to me on the street, like someone calls me a dragon or something, and I could immediately say, "You're calling me a homophobe," or "You're a homophobe," and "You're calling me a fag," or something like that, you know, and take offense to it. You don't always have to take offense to what people say, because people say mean things all the time, you know, and people can take the little words you say and manipulate them around into something that they think, and that's why it's important to give feedback and converse. You know, that's the logical way that we address problems in this world, is we give feedback, we receive feedback back, and that interchange of feedback is the intellectual ideology. So let's get into, he thought of me as a glorious beast that was strong and fearsome, didn't follow the norm, but was able to brash out of the status quo. So he was like, "You're my Draco, you're my dragon, you know, and imagine you being large and graceful and breathing fire, you know." And if you think of it metaphorically or poetically, you know, a person who says that, and this person isn't gay at all. Like, this person isn't even interested in the same gender. He's, like I say, he was getting married, and he was introducing me to his wife that he was marrying, his female friend, and how he loved her, and he still loves her to this day, you know, I assume. And so, anyhow, so I also thought it was doing really awesome, constructive, or not ordinances, doing really awesome, common organization. Yeah, doing really awesome, common organizing. So, like, doing things that are awesome, but then, like, in a different way, like, creatively. So, it's a lot of things you could take from the word Draco. But it's Draco. It comes from the word drago, dragon. It was given to me as a nickname because people thought I was great, gracious, and fearsome, and they thought I was like a dragon. Now, other people have names similar to dragons, you know. I wanted to get into. So, someone said to me, "What is your MOS?" So, like, that's weird, you know, because, like, that's something that military people ask military people. Like, military people ask, or your commander asks you, he says, like, "What's your MOS, officer? You know, what are you doing?" And your MOS is your military order of service. And so, like, because it is your order of service, it's like your operational standard. It's like what you do for the job that you represent, you know. And so I think of it as models of operation, you know, because these are like things that you daily live by and do, you know. It's your motto. This is like your MOS. And so I don't think that it's, resistance is always great in mass. So now Europe, they talk about en masse, which is the French term for a large gathering of fellowship. You know, I spoke to people about a fellowship I had been offered in New York. With some doctors, a fellow of doctors teaches other doctors to make them better. And so a mass is when we have like a gathering of people to express a point or express our ideas. I don't think everything should be en masse, but then some things should be, you know, some occasions should be en masse. You know, some things can be as simple as a simple video or audio or phone call. You know, I don't think the resistance en masse is always the best way. It can be simplified and rekindled to a global health venture. So we could look at, you know, the health of our country, you know, America, or the health of the world, and how we have to unite all of our differences. And so uniting our differences helps empower us to become better. And people who do that, like point people who are capable of motivating crowds or groups of people, you know, have powers in that. And you want to hope that these types of people are motivating people in positive ways. And they're not motivating them in negative ways, they're motivating them in positive ways. And if you think about that, then we should be able to be a little bit more expressive and unified, because that unification and expression, it makes us stronger, you know, it makes us great. So, now let's get on to what we really want to talk about. So, the Drago movement. So, we want to talk about ethics. We want to talk about, I don't really want to talk about politics, but we will. We'll delve a little bit into politics, because politics is important about our ethics and our moral understanding. Ethics are mostly about morals. So, now someone said to me that they thought of me as a dragon. What do we think of when we see a dragon? We want to destroy it, right? Because, like, the dragon will burn houses and villages down and things like that. That's the thing that we think of as a dragon. But we've seen quite a few depictions of dragons as being kind, loving, children, baby dragons, you know, giving life to their children and making lives. You know, that's the other aspect of the dragon, which is the alternative. And if we've even compared dragons to a lion, which is one of the most, I love lionesses. I don't know why. I have this thing for lionesses. They're swift, they're quick, they're hunters, they unify in packs, you know, and they have an alpha male that controls the pack and, you know, the pride. And so I have a thing about lions and lionesses. Same concept. You know, a lion is a beast that is feared by most. Dragons are carnivore omnivores that'll eat anything, you know, and I guess in a lot of ways I could be considered a dragon, because I'll eat almost anything, you know. Like, I used to remember the Life commercials, the Mikey will eat anything. Sure. So we want to talk about ethics. Do you think that politicians that we elect into office have standards that they have to live, similar to the standards that we have to live as Americans? Okay, so like, you're elected into office, you're a lawmaker. Your standards are to enact laws that the people want, that relate to the people, or amend laws that don't relate to the common culture of the people that are elected you or you represent. And this is why we have caucuses and millennial groups that advocate for these types of things, because their voices that are being heard can relay to the politicians who are elected to help mitigate changes or amendments or growth perspectives of standards in our culture. So politicians do this, and they do it under an ethical standards. But then a lot of politicians, because they are a mirror image of the people they represent, they gather the same flaws that we as Americans have. You know, we as Americans have flaws. We're not perfect. You know, I don't have flawless skin. I don't have a perfect, flawless body. I'm not the most brilliant and wealthiest person in the world. You know, I do strive for greatness, but I have flaws just like anyone else. You know, I mean, we all fall short of perfection, or the greatness of God, or perfection, in whomever's perspective that would fall into. Now, I want to get into the idea of ethics. So now, I spoke to someone who I'm spoken to for many years, who is married and a politician from a state, wherever, And he doesn't live under the same ethical standards as most people. Some politicians are divorced. Some politicians are married. You know, the ideal politician is married with kids, that lives in a picket-fixed, white-fenced home in their territory that they represent. And they don't argue, and they only have barbecues with plaid cloth tables on sunny days, you know. And that's the idea that they convey to the public, because then those public people who are voting for them will want to continue to vote for them. So that's why, you know, these politicians live under these semi-perfect visualizations. We as public figures, I strive to be a public figure. You know, I am a public figure, so to speak. We as public figures also have flaws, and we also have the perfect ideological view of what we are trying to convey to people and what people are able to see about us. And so when we have these types of ideals or ethics, we try to express those to people, but then sometimes something bad may happen, and we have to mix that badness in with our regular flow or streamless perfection, or attempt of streamless perfection. And those flaws pop up, and then we have to readjust ourselves so that we can be able to function. Now, this one particular politician has grown up many years. He's in his 50s or 40s, you know, young. And he's been bisexual most of his life, but he's conflicted with the bisexuality most of his life. And so, like him, like me, we have similarities, and so we converse about our similarities. I'm not his therapist. He doesn't pay me to be his therapist. You know, he more so is like an associate or a constituent. And because he's a constituent, you know, we talk about our differences and similarities. Now, he doesn't want to be with the same gender. He's very happy with his wife, and his wife is very happy with him. And they've kind of progressed, because at one point in time, he was cheating on his wife with men. And while he was cheating on his wife with men, people started to tell his wife while he was cheating, and they had like this big family intervention conference about it. And so when they had this big family intervention conference about it, it was like, honey, you're sleeping with men, but you're with me, and no matter how you look at it, it's adultery, which is true. You know, if you're a man married to a man, or a woman married to a woman, and you sleep with the other person, whomever, male or female, or beast, you know, you have committed adultery, essentially, because this is something that you have committed to this one person for your entirety of your life, and you've strayed from that commitment. If you lie to them, it is the exact same thing. If you lie to your better half, why would you expect your better half to not trust you, or to not be able to trust you? You know, if you're in a committed relationship with someone, you should be able to be honest with them. And this is the perfect example. He told his wife, well, you know, I've been struggling with this all my life, and I've been scared to tell you. You know, I love you dearly. I love our children. I love everything about us. But then I'm also in love with this other person who meets this need that I have, that I've craved and I've struggled with all my life. And so because they meet this need that they've craved and struggled with all their life, they're happy with this person and extra happy with you. And so they kind of made this agreement where we could see the other person. I have to meet them. I have to talk to them. We have to be able to converse together. And then if they're okay with me and I'm okay with them, then you guys can be able to be together. And in some instances, you know, those things don't work. You know, some women will say, no, fuck you. I mean, screw you. You know, you can't do those types of things to me. So these are ethical standards. Do we think that that person, and this is why I throw this question out there, because this is the caucus, and we're going to throw this question out there to you, and you guys are going to give me some type of response, you know, stimuli. This is science. And so do you think that that politician is bad, and that that politician is not capable of doing their job because of their ethical, because of their inhibitions in regards to their sexual practices? I mean, now, there's two terms that come up. If he's dishonest with his wife, he'll be dishonest with his country. We don't want anyone that's a politician to be dishonest with their country. We want them to be straightforward and honest. If he's dishonest with his wife, he's dishonest with his country. If he's dishonest with his country, he can't do his job. So then his ethical standards are bad, and he could be, you know, removed from office. But if he chooses to own up to his problems, says, you know, I understand that these are problems, these are things that I've struggled with, I don't know how to find the perfect ideal person to help me deal with these issues, but I want to deal with them, and I want the people who elected me to help me deal with them. Should we as a population say to them, we as electors or electorals or voters, should we say to them, oh no, you shouldn't, we don't want you to be in politics because you're gay. We don't want you to be in politics because you're a Christian. We don't want you to be in politics because you're a Mormon. We don't want you to be in politics because you're a Muslim. When do those types of ethical standards become qualifying or disqualifying criteria for being an essential politician? And I don't think that those should ever really be correlated. But this is something that people struggle with. I talk to a few people, mostly from the South, who tell me about how they go to these parties, you know. I don't go to sex parties. I'll be honest and say I've been to them. I'm not a really big sex party friend. You know, some people are. I think they can be fun, you know, but it's not my thing. I'm a committed one-on-one person, you know, FaceTime, phone sex kind of thing, you know, or something. Or, you know, passion, love, watching TV and movies together, you know, or cooking meals together and beaches or camping events together. You know, I'm a deep-hearted romantic. And so because of that, going to a sex party is very strange to me, because then, like, I'm trying to romance you, and so is four other guys and or four other girls, and then, like, I'm trying to romance you, or you're trying to romance me, and so is, like, 10 other guys or 15 other guys or girls, you know. And so because of that, it complicates relationship. Some people are comfortable with it because they have committed relationships already, and that this is just their little way of expressing themselves freely outside of their commitments. And some people, it's a little complicated. So I throw this out there to you because we're talking about the dragon and the beast. Now, some people say to me, because, you know, you're compared to a dragon, you're a demon. I don't think I'm demonic at all. I'm a whole-bodied Christian. You know, I've been Christian most of my life. Studied Catholicism, Christianity, Buddhism, briefly Islam. I've studied all types of religions because I think it's important to be well-versed. But wholeheartedly, I'm a Christian. I'm not a devil worshiper. I don't worship Satan. They are people who are Satanists. I am not a Satanist. You know, there are some people who are. If you're a Satanist, be a Satanist. It's not my issue. I'm not a part of that. You know, the dragon is a representation of bisexuality, and which some people say makes me a demon anyway. But representation of bisexuality or homosexuality and strength and resistance. You know, some people have said I'm like Paul Revere. I don't run around with a horn and say revolution because I don't, you know, I'm not chaotic and I don't believe in chaos. Chaos commits problems which don't make things go green and don't make things become progressive. Chaos is, when it is under control and order, chaos can become progressive. But when chaos is just rampant, you've got too many people trying to drive the car. If you've got four people trying to drive one car with one wheel, how are you going to drive the car? You know, you can't drive one car with four people, or 15 people driving a car with one wheel, or trying to control a ship with two helms, but you've got 30 people trying to control the helm. How are you going to drive the ship? You know, 15 of you want to go this way and 15 of you want to go that way, and you guys can't go the same way together. So now this is the topic. So now I was talking to some people who are veterans, and they've gone to these like sex parties, and politicians will be there. And like, they'll be in bed and they'll be having sex. They've got videos and stuff. And like, I say to myself, you know, I don't really know if that's profitable. I don't really know if you could really make any benefit out of it. I wouldn't want to extort the politician. I've said this a few times, because these kind of things are kind of just like sitting online and just holding of these wild sex parties with politicians that, you know, affects their ethical standards and their ability to do the law, as well as other people like businessmen, millionaires, billionaires, you know, trillionaires, whatever. Married people, you know, People who have kids who don't want their kids to know about them, you know, things like that. How would you be able to handle that? And I would like to know from the public. I would like to throw this out there and see what you guys think about it, because I don't necessarily think it's the best way. I think, you know, nothing is grand in mass. You know, like, I don't think that's something I would want to put in the paper. I think that is something I would want to talk to these individuals about and say that they should talk to their families about, and that if they felt like it affected their job or their goals or dreams, then maybe they should try to alternate their lives or give a response in relation to it. It could sway the majority and public opinion on the administration and the efforts of ethical scrutiny in gubernatorial affairs. So now, gubernatorial affairs, meaning that there are a lot of things that come into play. If you're working on a private project and you've got like foreign nationals, like people from other countries, and you're having a wild hotel party with them, and you're talking about secret stuff to them, or you've got your computer there, and they're looking on your computer at confidential documents or files about like test projects, that could affect your ability to do your job. So that is why it is important to be very cautious about people that you bring into your circle. You know, I try to be pretty cautious about people I bring into mine. But then in that same instance, I don't think that it's necessary to like put the person on blast and be like, "Oh, I'm gonna blow you up and make you see how like all of your information is dirty and all the things that you're doing and all that kind of stuff." I don't necessarily think that's the best option also either. You know, some people think that, you know, conflicting ideas, you know, that there are different ways to address a problem. Some people you can address it directly and instantly and like focus, and some people you have to like extensively work through their issues to be able to resolve conflicts. You can't just resolve a conflict like that, you know. So now I'm going to get back into bias. So now I told you that people say that because I consider myself the Drago movement. You know, there are a lot of people in this world who are bisexual, gay, who are open or in the closet. And there are a lot of people who think that we should be able to all have different views or opinions of life, and this is all about a movement of progression, especially in the millennial aspect. I wanted to talk to you about bias. So bias explains, there are three types of biases that explain all the fake news, pseudoscience, other junk in your news feed. So now, Twitter is awesome, bloggers awesome, these are all like similar applications. You know, they're awesome because they allow you to get insights or opinions of others. What do when we get the opinion of others? When we get the opinion of others, it is not necessarily fact. It can be partial fictional fact. It can be something that's not proven but is speculative. You know, what it is our job as humans, we discern all information that we receive from the universe. So when we see the sun and it's yellow or orange, you know, or we see the clouds in the sky and it's sky blue, those are reflections of the water of the earth or things like that. You know, we learn from these types of things in society. But when we take everything that someone says as fact and verbatim, and we don't implode realism in our lives or our individual situations, then we aren't really grasping the essence of life and like the essence of the beauty of life. You know, like we aren't when we see something and when we see something and we're like, "Oh, well, that means this, that, and the other, and I'm going to take this into another context." You know, that's not the essence of life. You know, the essence of life teaches us that the things that we see or adapt to in this world, we are able to develop schemas or understandings of those types of things to discern them, analyze them, and project them. And hopefully, we don't take things negatively and do negative things. We take things that are negative and we say, "How can I avoid this type of problem in the future?" You know, or how can I divert these negative things into positive things? Because that is the essence of humanity. Indiana University researchers have found, oh my goodness, have found that steep competition for users' limited attention means that some ideas go viral despite their low quality, even when people prefer to share high-quality content. Giovanni Luca Ciampaglia and Filippo Manzier, June 20th, 2018, 4:11 p.m. So now, something that someone says, all right, so like someone jumps off a roof and lands on a wall and breaks their leg, and then like they're viral on the internet, and then like people think that, you know, oh, that makes it, I'm viral, I'm rich, you know, I've gained something. No, your content is just really bad, you know. Or, you know, people look at me, like I have very few followers, no one's really interested in me, I'm not like an internet sensation, but my content may be good, you know, like the information that I portray may be useful to someone or beneficial. And so those are the differentials of the internet. Does one make the other bad or the other make the other good? I don't know. I mean, this video will be here for the existence of my life. I could die tomorrow and this video will be here, you know, and this is a snapshot of my life at one point in time and a project that I've been working on, I'm dyingly working on for some time now. And so, social media are among the primary sources of news in the U.S. and across the world, yet users are exposed to content of questionable accuracy, including conspiracy theories, clickbait, hyper-partisan content, pseudoscience, and even fabricated news reports. It's not surprising that there's so much disinformation published. Spam and online fraud are lucrative for criminals, and government political propaganda yield both partisan and financial benefits. But the fact that low-credibility content spreads so easily and quickly suggests that people and the algorithms behind social media platforms are vulnerable to manipulation. So yeah, you know, like algorithms, things like these. This is an algorithm. It's a pretty awesome algorithm too. Algorithms or things like those are things that are like created on the internet that allow the computer to process information and details, you know, to people. And so because of that, you know, that's the mathematics behind, or the science behind the internet. You know, what we as people, sometimes, you know, you've got 12-year-olds or 10-year-olds or 15-year-olds on the internet in America, and they think that everything is real, you know, and just like they, but everything their teacher teaches them isn't. So, you know, whatever. But we're going to talk about cognitive bias. So now, cognitive bias is originated in the ways that the brain processes information for every person encounters every day. This is what I'm talking about. So like things that we see, like the sky is blue, it's a reflection of the water. We may think the sky is blue because the sky is just blue. No, the sky is a mirror. It's like the mirror we have on a wall or the mirror we see when we're doing our makeup. You know, we have a mirror. The atmosphere is kind of like that mirror. And it reflects what it sees from what it is viewing. What does the earth view most of? Water. What is water? Kind of blue. You know, some water is green or purple. No, red sea. Anyhow, the brain can deal with only a finite amount of information, and too many incoming stimuli can cause the information to overload. That in itself has serious implications on the quality of information on social media. So right, just because you hear something on the internet doesn't make it a fact. You know, just like, you know, just because someone says that you're beautiful, JP, and I want to spend the rest of your life with you, doesn't mean it's a fact. You know, actions speak louder than words. And so, to avoid getting overwhelmed, the brain uses a number of tricks. The methods is usually effective, but also may become biases when applied in the wrong context. Cognitive shortcut happens when a person is deciding whether to share a story that appears on their social media feed. People are very affected by their emotional connotations of a headline. True. Which is why, even in this is the fact, the same for even a newspaper that you see on the street. Front pages and like headlines are what grab people into spending that quarter, 50 cents, or $1.50 or dollar for that newspaper to read it. Most people don't pay for, they pay for the ISP, which is their internet service provider, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, whatever. They pay for that, but they don't pay for the application. How do the applications make money? Advertising revenue. Everyone hates advertising revenue, but then they like free apps, so I don't know. To encounter this bias, people help pay more attention to the source of claim before sharing it. And we developed Fakey, a mobile news literacy game, free on Android and iOS. stimulating a typical social media news feed with a mix of new articles from mainstream and low credibility sources. Players get more points for sharing news from reliable sources and flagging suspicious content for fact-checking. In the process, they learn to recognize signals of source credibility. Source credibility means that it's been verified, or it's logical, or it's semi-plausibly true. You know, that's source credibility. You want source credibility in any of the art or forms of writings that you do, because source credibility is like verifying, like I said, source credibility in this. You know, this article was written by Giovanni Luca Schiampalgia and Filippo Manzier. That's their sources. Those are the sources for this article. This article is printed in whatever type of web domain, you know, where you can reference it, get the information yourself. A lot of this information I keep on my news feed, on my Twitter feed, so that you guys can reference it with my podcast, so that you guys can look at it in a course and study it and say, that JP guy is crazy. He's a crazy drag, fire-breathing dragon, you know. But it's called Fakey. So now Fakey is about fake news and media that is slightly credible or plausibly uncredible. Bias in society. Another source of bias comes from society. When people connect directly with their peers, social biases that guide their selection of friends come to influence the information they see. In fact, in our research, we found that it is possible to determine the political leanings of a Twitter user by simply looking at the partisan preferences of their friends. Our analysis of structure of these partisan communication networks found social networks are particularly efficient at disseminating information, accurate or not, when they are closely tied together and disconnected from other parts of their society. So now this is kind of like coded cryptology, you know, like this is being able to read into something, get a little bit of an insight into it, make a plausible determination in your mind, and gain some type of usefulness from the sources of information that we read, you know, which is important because this is the essence, this is creativity, and this is our brain. And then we, as the viewer, we can take that insight, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we need to go put our pitchforks and stand on that person's lawn. It doesn't necessarily mean that we need to throw the book at them. It doesn't necessarily mean that we need to marry them. It doesn't necessarily mean we need to kill them. It doesn't necessarily mean we need to rob them. It doesn't necessarily mean we need to talk to them about loan options. You know, none of those things necessarily come from what we discern from viewing someone else's content. It can give us insight into the person and the way that they think and the way that they do things, which is why I say I have two Twitter feeds. I have a personal and I have a professional. Someone wants to be able, if you want to work with me professionally, you can be able to look at my professional feed and see what type of things I'm capable of and fact check 9-7 years. And my personal feed, you can look at me and see what type of person I am personally. So then you can know, if I wanted to give this guy a gift, what would I get him? You know, what is he like? What is his favorite type of topic? If I was to have an event, what types of things would I want to talk about at the event? Who kinds of people would I want to be there? How would I want to present the event? You know, because then you have an idea of this person's professional and personal viewpoints, not just their resume. You know, like someone could take a resume and you can read so much into it, you know, whereas someone can take a digital resume, which is like a Twitter feed, and you can look into years of opportunities and experiences and interactions with people and logic and conversations, just like minutes in a corporate meeting. The study of how structure of online social network makes users vulnerable to disinformation, we built Hoaxy. So now, Hoaxy is like, I guess, vulnerable disinformation. So like, personal things we don't necessarily need, like your social security number, your birth date, and your address. You know, you don't necessarily need to give that to everyone. Sure, you want to be credible, like you don't want people to be like, I'm trusting you with this job, and I want to know that you're a good person. Well, look at my track record. Look at the experiences of other people. You know, I've got positive feedback, you know, or I've got slightly negative feedback. We get that from eBay. You know, eBay, the seller stores, they have negative and positive feedback, which you can make a determination. So Hoaxy, which is really funny, it's kind of like Bitcoin. Hoaxy takes all the information that it from an algorithm that it finds and accumulates on the internet, and it puts all that information together. And then it says, like, these are things that are similar and these are things that are not, and they thread them, which is awesome. So you can get, like, reports and things of things that are plausibly or probably logical and true, you know, so that we can discern that information from it scientifically and get a perspective of what something that we can use as a proof. And a proof makes a conclusion, which makes fact. So now I'm going to get into some other things because we don't have much time. I want to get back into the whole Drago event. Now, someone told me to promote this, and so I'm going to promote it because I really like the season. I'm not really looking forward to, well, I didn't really like AHS, American Horror Story. That was a little depressing, but it was interesting. I do like FX, which is, I want to say, like, the twin child of Fox or something, but, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to get into all that. Now, Pose, which is a beautiful artistic rendition of the 80s and the struggle of transgender, gender equality, understanding the gay lifestyle and how we can integrate into society and how they can relate to us. And I've been talking about this for many, many years. I've been begging people to think of an ideal of promoting not necessarily all the personal sexual attaches of the gay life, but then just like a common ground of culture of the gay life, so that they can be able to take this information and understand the struggle and maybe relate to it. I think that people can relate to, like, the gay lifestyle, black slavery, progressive cultural differences, and like Asia or India or Islam. I think there's a lot of things that we can gain from this because America is the melting pot, and we have to constantly remind ourselves that America is the melting pot. So that means there's lots of different people here, and we all have to respect each other. You know, and so Pose is a beautiful rendition of this. And so, I wanted to say this is from Janet Mock on why FX's Pose is deeply revolutionary. So now, it's 2018. We're talking about the 1980s. Now, there's a lot of things that come into play. You know, Gilead is sponsoring it. Now, Gilead is an organization that's a health organization that supports HIV awareness. You know, I take an HIV test every 3 months, even though I'm not really sexually active. You know, I still do. I don't know why. But, I mean, I'm not sexually active. No one's interested in me sexually. And if I do have sex, I usually do wear a condom. If I don't wear a condom, you know, I still have an HIV test. Sometimes condoms have broken. You know, like, I've had sex with people and condoms have broken. You know, there are all types of things that can happen. And so it's important to be able, and, you know, and HIV is not a death sentence either. It was maybe in the 1980s, but it's not in 2018, thank God. You know, some brilliant physicians or researchers or something. And so, let's get into this Janet Mock from the Paper Mag. So, as trans and queer communities of color continue to fight for access to equality and justice, it should be remembered that they have been the originators of so many aspects of culture that we take for granted, from pride itself to so much slang that has become part of the mainstream lexicon. These creatives have been innovators of culture. So, whether we choose to believe it or not, homosexuals have been innovators of culture for many, many years. They've also helped people become better lovers, like Kama Sutras and things like that. You know, I remember studying the Kama Sutra when I was 17, and I wasn't really even that much sexually active at 17. You know, what piqued your interest in the story? I'm not going to read the whole article because it's an interview with Janet Mock, but I will say that I do like the content. I like the time frame of the post theme. I like the characters. They're very interesting. They're interesting characters that you want to, like, delve into, you know. And so because of that, I've really taken a liking to the show. I think that it's really good. I don't know if they'll do a season two. It would be nice. You know, I think it's an interesting pop scene. You know, maybe they could do something different, like flip it around and make it where it's, like, the 1900s, and there's the same similar type of relationships or conflicts in social culture, or maybe in the future or now, you know, or maybe in that same cast and crew in the second season. I think that would be more logical, but anyhow, it's New York in the 80s. It's a really good show. It talks about homosexual life and the house scene. I'll tell you a little bit about what I experienced in the house scene. I grew up in a house of Chanel, avant-garde, and that scene for me was, you're 15 years old, you're gay, your parents don't really identify with you, you're living with your grandparents or wherever, you work a job where people at your job accept you because you do good work, but then they don't relate to you because you're the only black gay person there, bisexual person there. And so that was a conflict for me for so many years, because I've been open. I've been open to women and men about my sexual preferences, because I think that's important. I don't think dishonesty is ever really something. I think that's far more ungodly than being gay or bisexual. And so, anyhow, I lived in a house. We used to do like balls and things, you know. I was never really a big vulgar. I do like the art form. You know, but then now, if someone else is into that and that's their thing, I think that's a good, important thing. I just don't think that it's important for you to get falling, trapped into all the other things that can happen when you're in the gay life. You know, like prostitution, drug abuse, domestic abuse, gay bashing, you know. There are a lot of other negative aspects, and thank God there are a lot of rules and regulatory practices for like hate crimes in this country now, you know, probably from good legislators and like people who work in those types of fields who advocate for others for their protection and rights. But get an HIV test, please. I'd like the post scene. I hope that you've gotten a little bit of an understanding about me and the dragon, or Draco, you know, which is just like a nickname, you know, like JP, which has been my nickname since I was like a toddler. Ballroom culture. Now, ballroom culture is progressive, and they're saying that ballroom culture is going to start being a part of official dance, which I think is interesting, because it is a strange jazz form of hip-hop jazz. Well, it's not hip-hop or jazz. It's kind of like a mixture of all, and ballet, maybe, but it is more expressive, and I love dance, which is a beautiful culture aspect of the ball scene. Is probably the best aspect of the ball scene. I don't think that voguing is dance, though. It's an expression, but it is not an expression of dance. It's it can be an expression of dance. Yeah. So, I did want to talk about... Oh, do you think that a person who is on the down low, who is a political figure in drag, consulted with some married politicians on having extramarital affairs and telling their wives how their ethical behavior will affect their job and duties in regards to resources, even when progressive caucus of Americans in the world support those types of notions? I don't think that it should affect their view. I think that it should affect their expression. I've seen quite a few politicians who are openly gay do drag, and they've gotten positive responses from their public by doing so. And... my listening audience was vested in political issues and affiliation, which is why I don't want to talk about divisions without first finding reliable information to discern my vote. And so that's why I'm saying I don't think that it's necessarily good to talk about political differences that we as our own culture or people can't relate to. You know, if we're having some type of conflict that we can't identify with, then the people that we elect to lead us had some type of conflict, it would be even worse. That's why we have select special committees and special councils for things like that, because sometimes people think that the politician is perfect, or like the public figure is perfect, and that they aren't, or that they need to be them, which implies that they are not perfect, and all of us are imperfect on this earth. So, I'm going to close on that. And so now, I did want to say really quickly, Urban Dictionary, okay, this is what we're going to say in closing. Urban Dictionary has said, let me find it. Hold on 1 second. Urban, there it is. Where'd you go that quick? urban. Zoot. Okay, dragon. So, when you think of dragon, don't think about homophobe or phobia. Think about new homosexual person, you know, or progressive homosexual person. Dragon. Your dragon's your inner strength and spirit, strong and powerful, flies the skies, freely watching, protects itself, does not fear others in its way. Everyone has a dragon in them. It's just yours to either free or not. If your dragon is free, you're a strong individual that can scar easily or get put down with one shot. It's free. It's beautiful. Thou shalt not slay thy dragon. Thou dragon shall slay thou. Interesting. A devil to some, the Brits. A good luck charm to others, the Chinese. But to me, they're just badass. Don't meddle in the affairs of dragons, for you are crunchy and taste good with ketchup. I love ketchup on my French fries. Please excuse the length of this definition. This is from Urban Dictionary, by the way. I love Urban Dictionary. It's like Wikipedia. Please excuse the length of this definition, but I enjoy being thorough. In the traditional sense, dragons were large reptilian creatures that thought on the medieval time, other than Eastern and Western sense. In Western realm, the dragon was a greedy, tyrannical brute who ate damsels, demolished villages, and kept a huge treasure hoard. Most portrayed as generally lizard-like creature with many crests and horns, terribly sharp claws, large teeth, sometimes quills or fur, and almost always wings. I actually love flying, you know, like, but I'm not a bird. Anyhow, different variants occurred, such as the wingless two-legged linworm or the scorpion-tailed wyvern. I don't know what the freak those are. They might have also had a lion's or dog head. I have heard about dragons having lion's head. In the Eastern realms, dragons were beneficial and wise. They did, of course, keep their treasure hoards. A dragon is nothing without his sheenings. I mean, I'm not a hoarder. I think if anything that you have, you should spend. You know, I just don't think that you should hoard something and not spend it. You know, if I was a dragon, I had a treasure, I'd be figuring out ways to, like, fly around and not destroy villages, because then I have to spend more treasure to rebuild the village. You know, I'd be figuring out ways to support and secure the treasures or villages instead of burning them down. That's just my logic, you know. But anyhow, they're very good at eating. They were snake-like, colorful, possessed deer antlers, usually had a mane of fur or a crest of the stuff running down their back. They were awfully powerful beings, usually close to the gods, and lived in the mountains. I love the mountains. And sometimes in the ocean. I don't know much more. I'm pretty sure they could breathe scalding water. Not really into scalding water. Nowadays, dragons are icons. Anime abuses them, fantasy novels use them, and D&D keeps them sacred. In DD, these are the two main types of dragons called true dragons in the Western variety. Here's a list. Metallic, good dragons. Gold, much like a cross between a Western and Eastern dragon. Breathes fire, very wise. Wings like large fins. Silver, traditional Western dragon with a tail fin. Breathes frost, serene, and graceful. Brass, again the traditional Western dragon, has connecting to its limbs, its body, aquatic, breathes lightning, fascinated with war. Still good though. Brass, traditional Western, has the fin-like wings of the godly, breathes fire, loves to talk. Copper, traditional Western, fin-like wings, spits acid, incorrigible prankster. Chromatic, evil dragons. Note, all of them are traditionally Western. So they're variances of dragons, just like they're variances of people, which makes a lot of sense. Red, loves to destroy, incredibly greedy, even for a dragon, breathes fire, obviously. Blue, vain, proud, would do anything to save its hide, breathes lightning. Green, the manipulator, honey-tongued, curious of other creatures, very interesting, breath weapon. It spits a cloud of corrosive vapor, my favorite, chromie. Black, horrible, temper, territorial, cruel, spits acid. White, very stupid, breathes frost, more of an animal than a higher being. Note, all these dragons are intelligent except though white, and cast magic, speak, manipulate, conquer, what have you. Most of them above stuff is from DD. Who is DD, and what is DD? Look, sir, Thelonious is slaying the linworm. Shinra will help us, he'll know what to do. Silver dragon, pretty. Green dragon, pretty. Anywho, I like the idea of the dragon because it is the progressive view of a gay man. It is a powerful and majestic beast. Now, Urban Dictionaries has taken us on a mythical ride of a short story that, you know, maybe I should creatively write into a movie or something, you know, and see if you guys would be more interested in that. But now, I just wanted to get some, you know, insights with you guys about this whole topic of the Draco, you know, what the name means, how long I've had it, what it's really represented. It doesn't represent anything other than that. I mean, like, there are things that are similar to dragons. I do like other things like champagne. I love champagne. I adore champagne. I've adored champagne my whole life, since like 99. Which doesn't have anything to do with, like, anything other crazy. I mean, like, people take what they want from what they see and what they know, you know. And so, I'm not going to leave it at that. I'm going to pop up my freaking Anchor FM station, my website, in case you guys want to, like, talk to me about some topics or talk to me about some of the things I've talked to you about. Maybe you want to leave some nasty comments. You can leave those, too, if you like. The dial-in number again is 1-641-715-3900, extension 860-662-pound. You can leave a voicemail there. If you don't want me to air your comment, you know, I don't have to necessarily air it. If you just want to say something, I can just, like, mention you or something like that. The website is https://jdglobalcorpceo.wixsite.com/main. The Anchor radio station for the podcast is https://anchor.fm/JPDW. So, I hope that you've enjoyed our podcast for this day. I'm sorry it's been a while since we've podcasted. I've been looking for some really interesting topics because I'm trying to find something interesting to talk to you guys about. You know, and I thought that I would talk to you about me as a person. I think that it's important for you to understand me, so you can understand my view, especially in regards to the Millennial Caucus, and how the ways that I work and the things that I try to express to people and get people to think. I think that when I help other people think, it makes me think better. This is why I send out stimuli for you to give me a response, because then it helps me become more interesting, and it helps you become more interesting, because then we're integrating together. And what is this called again? The Millennial Caucus. And we're all in this caucus together. Like, we think of ourselves as a big crowd of, like, thousands of people. We're all in this caucus together. There are all different types of people in this caucus, so we all have different opinions, and when we combine all of our opinions into one logical thought, we can all think together, and we'll all be unified and strong. You know, we'll be able to, like, grasp the balls with people, you know, and do hi ninja chops and aikido, you know, and things like that. Because, you know, the best ninja is not the stupidest ninja, but it's the smartest ninja who's able to get back off the ground and continue fighting. So I leave you with that. Enjoy the rest of your week, day. Happy belated 4th of July. What else did I want to mention? Any other things in the news? Oh, happy belated 4th of July. Good luck to all the politicians running for the election this year. Good luck to all the Americans. Trump is doing something really great with the job numbers. I think that's awesome how, like, everyone in this country has a job. You know, Trump needs to hire me for something. I don't know. And so, anyhow, have a good day and enjoy the rest of your week. Please do drop in and leave a note. I will leave these in the chat. And be good, be well, be peaceful, be logical, empower yourselves and empower others. Thank you and enjoy your day.